It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Mike, baby, be flopping!
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, jeez, Mike Bibby threw me off. You can email me at msoce, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook.
And we're in the blogosphere.
We are in the blogosphere. Where do we go, Kobe?
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
That's a lot to remember.
That
it's
is.
A good thing you're over there.
Yep.
Yes, and of course, this show is available as a podcast, and we are also available on iTunes. Working the board, a man who loves Florida Panthers announcer. What's it, Randy Moeller?
Randy Moeller.
Yeah, a man who loves Randy Moeller's calls as much as I do. To see Mr. Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
It's the only reason why I care about the Florida Panthers.
Oh, yeah,
I want them to score just so Randy can scream something.
Can you imagine if they went to the playoffs or the Stanley Cup?
Playoffs? Don't talk to me about playoffs.
All right.
You kidding me?
You kidding me?
Playoffs?
No.
They're just trying to win another game. Mm. See, that's the quieter version of
Mr. Mora.
We could do dramatic interpretive readings of our favorites. The Bears are who they thought they were. You want to crown him, and we let
Get
him off
your
the
facts
hook.
Straight. That ain't true. I'm a man. I'm 40.
Sorry, we got distracted here.
Oh, we got a show.
We do. We have a lot. We do. We have yet another interview with Food Network chef, Food Network personality, and chef Robert Irvine. Come back for seconds. He is he had a lot of fun and said to call any time, so I did. He is going to be
see what happened.
You asked for it. He's going to be one of the members of the Chopped All Stars, which premieres Sunday night at 9 on Food Network, and we'll talk to him a little bit. But I think we should start things off. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll mention what is opening in theaters today because there's new movies. Now, full disclosure. And I've ranted about this before. It's a rough life, but as film critics, you know, we get advanced screenings, and sometimes they're press screenings in the morning, and sometimes there are those advanced word of mouth screenings at night. And for some unknown bizarre reason, there were three screenings scheduled on Tuesday, and I couldn't attend any of them because my daughter took ill. And so it helps if you have the mic on, Kobe. Now try
yes.
it.
Mm, yeah. That's my response.
Yeah, that's not good. So I had to be stay-at-home dad with the sick child. Now, a little parenting tip for you young parents out there. And maybe this is because of I know how I was in my sick days. I'm sure Kobe was the same. Is when you have a child who is ill and they can't attend school, that does not mean they get to sit on the couch and watch useless crap all day long. So the rule in the Soci House is you can watch a little, but you also have to watch what dad is watching, which is not terrible in our house because she is willing and able to watch whatever dad throws at her.
She was watching Sketty Wesson.
Yes. So we watched, actually, she saw about half of a documentary about Quincy Jones.
Oh.
Yes. She did not see Rashida or Piggy. But she's starting to get interested in the music of Michael Jackson. I don't know how to feel about that. And then,
really?
I'll talk about it later. And then, yeah, she, at her request, wanted to watch Once Upon a Time in the West. So we finished Once Upon a Time in the West Tuesday evening. And she felt better. See, spaghetti westerns, they cure people. There's antioxidants in them, and it's natural.
They're good for your health.
They are good for your health.
Yes.
They are. Okay, so opening in theaters today, we have Rango, the Johnny Depp lizard animated feature from Gore Verbinski. You just gave a look of meh, Mr. Slager.
I don't know. I see I got a couple friends that are real hot on this, and oh my gosh, can't wait for it to come out. I want to see this, that, and the other thing.
So that's how your friends sound?
Yeah, that's exactly how they sound. Hi, Luke. I don't know. I couldn't get into
it. We'll tap into your psyche in a little bit. Our one of my colleagues down in Georgia, Jeff Marker, saw it, really, really enjoyed it, and also said there's a lot of pick the Western homage in the film. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And then there's Beastly, a movie, a new version of Beauty and the Beast with Vanessa Hudgens. Why am I even bringing this up? And seriously, the Adjustment Bureau, that's Matt Damon and Emily Blunt running around being chased by men with hats, like the Hat Squad. And Take Me Home Tonight, a film that stars and was produced by Topher Grace, which is finally being released after being on the shelf for about 3 years. Mm. But Anna Faris is in it.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who that is?
Nope.
Kobe, I'm going to make you look up a young lady.
Ah, not, change of pace.
Not, you make me ill.
Yeah.
Well, I'll make you look at Jane Russell later. And we'll talk about Jane Russell a little later on. We'll also have an updated version on what is Kobe watching, which you can also read his blog. He will now be posting reviews of the movies I make him see.
Yep.
And, if you ever post on your blogs, the 70s were a different era, I'm going to smack you in the throat. I'm just saying. You can say that here. I guess I can't stop you, but I'll stop you online.
Okay. Okay.
You can't do every review with that sentence.
Well, the 70s were a different time.
That's Kobe's euphemism for it was slow. Kind of like when you hear visually stunning, which means the movie's boring as hell. So, yeah. I hear you, whippersnapper. All right. So, yeah. So we'll start off with, when this is the plight of having a film show on Fridays, as I like to call it, the five-day-old post-Oscar analysis. Because I was on Morning Edition Monday, but, here it is Friday.
Yep.
And, congratulations to everybody. There wasn't really, maybe the Roger Deakins snub. However, the award happened so early, I didn't feel like leaving like I threatened to on my blog. I'm sorry. Something that was written on the internet didn't actually happen.
Oh.
I apologize. I apologize on behalf of bloggers everywhere. But congratulations to the King's Speech. That was a big – I was really – probably the biggest surprise was the fact that it won Best Director and Best Screenplay. Mm-hmm. The guy saying he's now the author is the oldest original screenwriter winner in Oscar history, which may or may not be true. But it's not a flashy film. I would have thought Inception, which
yeah,
was very
I was,
dense.
I was kind of surprised.
I thought that would get – and I thought that would get directors since Christopher Nolan – or I'm sorry. I thought that would get screenplay since Christopher Nolan didn't receive a nomination for director. That would get something. It did get some awards, but not that. So bully for them. We now know from the Academy Awards that there is a 7-second delay. Thank you to Melissa Leo for that. And you know what? With all due respect to my buddy Scott Hoke at Morning Edition, who said she should have known better. If you know Melissa Leo's reputation as an actress, she is extremely focused, very professional, always on it. If you watch from her work in Homicide and Tremé, which is on HBO now, and the films that she's done in the past, she was really naturally shaken up. I know she won the Spirit Awards and she's won some other awards, but the fact that she was just completely flabbergasted winning this, it was kind of cool to see. And the fact that she was getting hit on by Kirk Douglas because Anne Hathaway was too far away. So the fact that it kind of blurted out, and guess what? Our national core, as we know it, didn't crumble and fall. You know, it wasn't.
It did not.
It did not, and it wasn't. It was not. It did not.
It did not.
And it wasn't. You know, the Super Bowl. It wasn't planned.
Nope.
So I think we're okay.
You know what? Everybody's still alive.
Everybody's still alive. You still got all your fingers.
Yes.
Do your parents still love you?
They do.
My family still loves me.
Okay.
I told them I loved them. And then they said they loved me, and we had a great practice. Sorry, Tim Tebow reference. So everything was fine. Everything was fine. And by the way, and now there's rumors going that they're going to re-release the King's Speech in a PG-13 version.
What?
There is, I know, I will explain. The film, of course, received an R rating, which we've ranted about on the show before.
Yep.
Completely unnecessary. There is one scene where the F word is uttered 5 times. Now, according to the MPAA, the unofficial or official rule, we don't know because nobody's ever allowed in the offices, you get 2 Fs and you can get away with the PG-13. Well, Tom Hooper, much to his credit, the director, would not budge on it and went with an R rating. Well, the Weinstein Company, the producer, the studio, now that they have an Oscar winner on their hands and probably obviously want to cash in on more. I don't think it's happened yet. I looked in Friday's papers and it has not happened, but word has it. And this was according to sources, I think, from Variety and from a link of that article from The Onion, was that they're going to take 2 of them out. Wow. Thanks. Children are now safer because they heard 2 F-bombs instead of 5 or 3 instead of 2.
It's a whole new world.
No, it's not. It's not an Aladdin ballad. Shut up. So, anyway, we'll see if that happens. By the way, I took my daughter to see the King's Speech. She's fine.
Yeah,
her soul's intact.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
Yep. I saw her yesterday or a couple days ago when she was in.
She was fine.
She
right?
was fine. Yep, totally
head's
fine.
Not spinning. No.
Nope.
No. No need for Max von Sydow to Mm-mm. put a crucifix to her forehead. She's okay.
Yep.
All right. So anyway, we'll see if that happens. Other than that, not a whole lot of other major surprises. We knew Christian Bale would win. We knew Natalie Portman
cool.
would win. Sorry, Netta. And the fact that, King's Speech won. So, and the other thing, folks, is, and this is...
Inception got sound, audio, and...
It did, so, but it did not get score. I was really hoping, but I guess, now Trent Reznor can be listed as an Academy Award winner. So, we're not Nine Inch Nail fans,
no,
is that
no,
it?
No, we are not Nine Inch Nail
no.
fans on this side of the board.
Really?
Yep.
Because you were too young for them.
I
was in college when they came out, when Nine Inch Nails came out.
Honestly, how old was I?
It was a different time.
7.
The 90s. Shut up.
See, turn around just like that.
Yeah.
See what I can do?
And you saw her first.
Yeah, that's right.
You know who's still married?
Yeah.
Diana Krall.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome to Inside Radio.
Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, good times are happening. So with the award, this is the only award show I watch. I don't watch the Grammys because the music I listen to is never there. Mm. And the Tonys, well, I do from time to time, but I don't have time to go to New York.
Yep.
And the Emmys, if I'm cleaning the house. So this is the only one I really pay attention to. And just a couple things, folks. I know they keep trying things every year. You're not going to get the show in under 3 hours. It's just not gonna happen. It is, you know what? This is the beginning of the 20th century version of the 4 minute mile. It's just not. And I don't care who's wearing what.
No,
I don't care. I don't need to watch the pre. I don't even need to watch the post. No offense to Jimmy Kimmel because I could be up early and do Morning Edition. But, I'm not there to watch the host either.
Yeah.
I just want the results.
I thought, who was it?
Anne Hathaway and James Franco.
I thought Franco was weak.
Well, you know what? I think, let's look at it from Franco's standpoint for a little bit. The guy is willing to try anything, and that's what he's been doing. He's been writing and directing short movies, and
he's cutting his arm off,
and doing General Hospital, and, attending classes. He got offered. What are you going to do, say no?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So, I'm sure it was a lot more work than he expected. And, Anne Hathaway was fine. She got to be the funny one, and she got to wear a suit and a tux and sing at Hugh Jackman, which was kind of cute because I remember when Jackman hosted. And, the only thing those two needed to do, the only job of them is, one, to read the Bruce Valanche written jokes or whoever wrote them, and, two, be under the age of 50. They were. Mission accomplished. Big deal. So... Now, young man, Mr. Slagle, you watched the awards. Your impressions on these? Because, you know, you, I believe, are the demographic they were going after with these Oscar-nominated co-host and the one who thought was going to get nominated and didn't. So what was that on your end?
I'm with you. I can do without the whole pre-thing 4 hours beforehand. I don't care what everybody's wearing.
And you know what? You don't get great scintillating conversation on the red carpet for 2 minutes.
No.
We don't do two-minute interviews here at Film Sociology.
No, we do not.
I want you
looking at this. I'm looking at this.
The
chat with
Robert.
25:27.
You get
bad boy
full,
clocks in.
We have attention spans here at Film Sociology and NPR for that matter. So
we do that.
I did the red carpet thing once last year, and not my fave.
Yeah,
I want time. Mm-hmm. I want quality time with Penelope Ann Miller, among others. I got it with Robert Irvine last week. Not that quality time. So yeah, it was fine. So I'm sure they're gonna mix things up next year. Bully for them.
Yeah, I didn't fare too well in my Oscar pick.
Yeah.
Ballot, whatever you want to call it.
The ballot. It is a ballot.
Yeah, I didn't do well in that.
Yeah, I owe Laura.
I did. I did pick what was God of Love?
God of Love. That was the short film that was one of the actually it won Best Short Film at the Indianapolis International Film Festival.
Okay, see, and I picked that because I remember you talking about it on this very show.
Thank you.
And what
you.
Happens? I won it, and yep.
And I didn't pick it. Mm-hmm. That guy, the star, the director, wound up having one of the best acceptance speeches of the evening.
Yeah,
really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So he was genuinely giddy. It was kind of cool. So now, if you have not seen these films, and of course, you know, Oscar awards also mean extra bucks. King's Speech is going to stay in theaters longer. The Fighter will stay in theaters longer. Black Swan is going to stay in theaters longer. I think True Grit is still there if you still want to see that. That's worth checking out.
Little beef.
So, yeah. So good times. I had a good time. I always have a good time. It's the Film Geeks Final Four. Now that Selection Sunday is coming very soon,
mm-hmm.
No chance of my alma mater? Mm. No chance of yours?
Nope.
Okay, we'll move on.
Yep.
Now the day before the Oscars, there's always the Razzies, and yeah, I saw some of these. It's just sad, really. So here are the Razzie Award winners. There's not as many as the Oscar, so I will go through all of them. Worst Picture, The Last Airbender.
I think Chris Lloyd would be happy that got that.
Yeah, well, we all were, but I know Chris was pushing for Yogi Bear, except it didn't make it. That was his worst film. Grown Ups was mine. Grown Ups was nominated, but didn't get it. Ashton Kutcher won Worst Actor for Killers and Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Thanks, Ben. Worst Actress, boy, big shock. The quartet that makes up Sex and the City 2. God awful film. Worst Supporting Actress, Jessica Alba. Because she was in The Killer Inside Me, Little Fockers, Machete, and Valentine's Day. Killer Inside Me is actually pretty good. But this is their award show, and they can give it to whoever they want. Worst Supporting Actor, Jackson Rathbone for The Last Airbender and Eclipse. Worst Eye Gouging Misuse of 3D, Last Airbender. I'm with you on that one. That wasn't needed. A lot of the movies in 3D aren't needed. That one is definitely there.
It is just sad.
Worst Screen Couple / Screen Ensemble. Yeah, the entire cast of Sex and the City 2.
That's less you like to see.
Yeah, that's right. Worst Director, M. Night Shyamalan for The Last Airbender. And I still think The Happening is a worse film, but I'm in the minority in the doughy white guys in Gina camp. Last Airbender also won Worst Screenplay by Mr. Shyamalan and Worst Prequel, Remake, Ripoff, or Sequel. Yes, Sex and the City 2. So, yes, The Last Airbender is the king's speech of just crap cinema. Congratulations. All right, we're going to take a short break, and actually we're going to set things up, Kobe. We're gonna pay a little musical tribute to Jane Russell, who died on February 28th at the age of 89. Got a song for you from the 1953 musical Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And if you remember, this is the one that's set in the gymnasium, and none of the guys are paying attention to Jane Russell. They're too busy working out in tight shorts. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org.
3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Honey, you'll hurt yourself. Can't play tennis, my golf's a menace. I just can't do the Australian crawl. And I'm no better at volleyball. Ain't there anyone here for love? Sweet love, ain't there anyone here for love? I'm apathetic and non-athletic. Can't keep up in a marathon. I need some shoulder to lean upon and a couple of arms to hold me. Ain't there anyone here for love?
Hi, I'm Robert Irvine, and you're listening to Film Sociology, WFI in Indianapolis.
All right, welcome back. This is Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Soci. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org. I'm also on Facebook. We just heard Jane Russell. We'll talk about her a little more later on in the show. We will get to our interview with Chef Robert Irvine, who is going to be a part of the Chopped All-Stars Sunday night at 9 o'clock on Food Network. But we have another bum rush, a drive-by review courtesy of Film Sociology producer emeritus Melissa Davis.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And she has to come in because she's very excited because the let me rephrase it. I'll give
so
it proper.
Excited.
The Golden Globe nominated film Burlesque is on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
Yes, it is. I don't know if I'm so excited, but I'm like somewhat excited.
You because you saw it and you liked it. And
I did like it. I mean, it's cute. It's watchable. This is what you should wait for a DVD for it. I wouldn't recommend going to the theater and spending $15 with popcorn and all that. But if you're just going to rent a movie, sure, for sure.
Definitely. I have a question. Does Stanley Tucci play a gay sidekick?
He does!
No!
Are you shocked?
Shocked and amazed.
And the story is so utterly predictable.
So they just take out Meryl Streep and put Cher in, basically. Yes. And because, well, if you think about it, they're, you know, she's working up the ladder in the undressed business.
Yes, yes. I mean, a lot of people in the burlesque community were somewhat frustrated by the portrayal of burlesque because it's nothing like the movie. The real world of DIY burlesque is not like this. But, you know, if you go into it with that attitude, just to have fun, sure. If you're looking for some kind of real-life depiction of burlesque.
Or cabaret.
Right.
It's not Fosse.
This is cabaret light. I mean, that's what this is.
Okay.
This is not burlesque. But it's nice to, it's a fun time. And how can you, I mean, anyone who loves Cher will love this movie.
You love Cher.
It's so cheesy. It's so Cher.
You love Cher, and yet there's a movie of hers I want you to watch, and you won't watch it. Chastity.
Oh, but
her road picture produced by Sonny Bono.
Doesn't she hate that movie?
I don't know. You talk to her. Wait a minute. Oh, no, she doesn't Twitter.
She stopped tweeting, apparently.
She stopped tweeting, so.
All right, I gotta go, guys.
All right, well,
sorry.
Nice to see you.
I gotta go host a show over on the
next
other
door.
Side.
Yeah, good to see you, Melissa.
I do some ATC sometime. I do a little All Things Considered.
I see.
Yeah, you might want to check it out.
Wow, we'll have.
You haven't heard of it.
We'll have a groovy time.
Okay, yeah, get the DVD. It's worth a watch. Goodbye.
Bye, Melissa.
Bye, Melissa.
Bye, guys.
Oh God. Wow. All right.
And the door closes.
And we're back. Okay.
Yep.
We'll get the DVD reviews a little bit. But, yeah, about a month ago was my first chat with Food Network personality Chef Robert Irvine, of course, host of Restaurant Impossible, which is on currently. He just got done with Worst Cooks in America. And, well, you know, second best in that competition. And he is a part of the Chopped All-Stars, which is going to premiere Sunday night at 9 o'clock on Food Network. And, yeah, he said those immortal words, call me anytime.
So you did.
So I did. Now, to be fair, I did email him saying, I'm going to call you in a moment. I
just it wasn't one of those, call him, hey, what you doing?
Dude.
Hey.
Yeah, I did not do that. I did not do that.
Listen to the song.
Yeah. Don't be that guy. And listeners, don't be that person at the concert, please. Yep. So anyway, he was more than happy to talk about Chopped All-Stars, a little bit of Restaurant Impossible, and some action movies. And just a note, this conversation took place before the Academy Awards. So just so you know, here is my chat with Chef Robert Irvine. Joining me on Film Sociology is Food Network personality and a chef who really wants a remake of Under Siege, because not only can he cook better than Steven Seagal, he's in better shape. Chef Robert Irvine, how are you, sir?
I'm good. And yourself?
Hanging in there. Been seeing you quite a bit on the telly lately. Let me ask you, how long did you have to stay platinum?
How long did I what, sorry, Matt?
How long did you have to stay blonde for the bet?
Well, about an hour and a half.
Okay.
How are you?
Man of your word.
Yes, about an hour and a half. I'm a man of my word. It was kind of an interesting... blonde is not my color.
So, yeah, no remakes of Demolition Man coming anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. Although I wouldn't mind doing that for I'm Just a Cook, the Steven Seagal movie. I do like that.
Yes, I agree. Now, I know you have Restaurant Impossible, of course, but you are also a member of the Chopped All-Stars, which is premiering on March 6th. Now, I know with that one, you open up the basket and you don't know what's inside. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. You do three courses, the first course appetizer, then a main course, then a dessert, if you get through the rounds. What's particularly exciting about this was it was for charity. You know, so somebody, whoever won, made $50,000 for a charity. Nobody got paid. It was just a fun, charitable thing. And, you know how I love charities. So
yes, and your competitive nature.
And my competitive nature, yes. I don't like to lose. I'm a bad loser.
What was your charity?
My charity was a guy named Kelly Kosky, Worldwide Ministries from Atlanta, who has an AIDS hospital in South Africa that they finished building last year. Now, if you think about, you know, a hospital in general, last year alone they served 70,000 people, treated, and give them medicine for AIDS. So that was my charity.
I see. Now, with this one, who were you up against? I'm not going to ask you to give away the results, but who are you competing with?
It's Anne Burrell, myself, Duff Goldman, and Claire Robinson.
Ah, they didn't set you next to Anne, I hope, in the kitchen?
We were right next to each other. Yeah.
At your request?
At her request, I think. You know, seriously, I think she really likes me.
Well, why shouldn't she?
No, she does. She is a funny, funny person. She's an awesome teacher and just a great human being.
Now, I know once you open the baskets, that's that. And I know improvisation is a tool that you need in the kitchen. Was this a faster improvisation than hopefully anything you've had to do in your own kitchen?
Definitely faster. You know, the minute you open that basket, you have 20 minutes to put something on a plate and serve three judges. And you really have to think out of the box. And there's some ingredients I can tell you specifically on our challenges that I'd never even heard of before.
Uh-oh.
So definitely. One of the things I did not understand was that, you know, instead of just course by course, it's about a meal. So the appetizer has to work with the main course has to work with the dessert. So it's kind of a whole meal. But you really don't understand that at the beginning. I was sort of going course by course.
Can you tell us, did you connect?
I can tell you I had haggis.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Venison. And the dessert, well, you have to wait and see that one.
Okay. Now, I know you can at times be chatty when you're in competition. Was there some elbows between you and Anne in the kitchen?
Oh, listen, Anne is the queen of smack. I just have to try and keep up with her, you know. She lives in New York. She's got that sassy attitude. Some of it I'll play into. She just likes to needle you to get you going.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that I just laugh and like, yeah, whatever. because you can't get involved in that when you're working so fast.
Right.
You've got to concentrate.
Yeah, I remember in the finale of you apparently on the sacred line in the kitchen when it came to coaching.
And that's funny because she did more of that than I did. except they showed more of me, but it's just kind of funny. But hey, it's television, right?
It's all about editing, I guess.
Yes.
Now,
but, yeah, I mean, we just love each other and we banter back and forth, and ultimately, Eboli is a winner because it doesn't matter about money; it's about people
and the charities that they have.
That's right.
Now I have to. I'm going to steal a line from Michael Simon. What's the over under on your jacket removal during this competition?
The over under on there is no jacket removal.
Okay.
I was so busy, and so I can tell you, I sweated buckets more than I've ever. It's so fast. It's so intense. Even on Iron Chef, I didn't sweat that much.
Well, that you had more time.
Because you only have such a short period of time to get it done. Then you have to run over the kitchen to find things, and it was a very, very tough, tough competition.
Now, how are things with Restaurant Impossible? By the way, this past week, that seemed like the hardest hedge you've had to deal with.
Well, you know, Restaurant Impossible is an awesome show, just as Dinner Impossible and Worst Cooks. But the difference between Restaurant Impossible and Worst Cooks and Dinner is these people rely on you to fix them, you know. When you walk into a place and tell somebody that, oh, they've been doing something wrong for 3 years, it's hard for a lot of people to take. And the Secret Garden, specifically the food, was awful. The place was a terrible mess, in my opinion. And the cook that had been cooking Ergo for 25 years really wanted to fight me because I told him that he wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
And when you tell people that to their face, obviously it sort of upsets a lot of people. But, you know, when they realize, it's funny because when I asked him to make a hollandaise sauce, he put the eggs directly into a pan onto the heat. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to make you look silly in front of millions of viewers. I'm going to tell you how to do it properly. And once I'd done that, he sort of relaxed and said, you know what, hey, he's here to help us. He's, you know, and what's funny about that is the first 8 hours is all adversarial,
mm-hmm.
you know, from them to me. But then all of a sudden something twigs and they really see that I'm trying to help them. You know, I talked to John from Neglio's last night, and he was so busy. This was a show the week before. He was so busy he couldn't keep up. He couldn't even keep food in the kitchen. And that's why I won, you know, that they can succeed once I've left. And if it means that I get into arguments or something with these owners or the chefs, then I'm okay with that. But once they realize that it's for their own benefit, it works.
There is a wonderful, like you pointed out, the revelation of fresh ingredients.
Yeah, I mean, it's so alien to me to think that people believe that things in cans and frozen are really fresh. And a lot of people believe that. They mm-hmm. think they're saving money when in actual fact they're not. Fresh is best. Mm-hmm. Keep it simple. You know, there's an old saying, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. You know, but you let the ingredients talk. If a steak is supposed to be a steak on a plate, then make that the prime focus. You know, season it correctly, cook it correctly, and move on. Mm-hmm. You know, you can put side dishes with it, but don't overpower the steak. Once they get that, it's really easy.
Now, when it came to the decor on this one, I know there was challenges. Of course, you made a 9-year-old in Indiana wince with the moment with the sledgehammer.
I made the producer flinch like that, too. it's funny because I have a vision. You see, people don't understand, and it's such a short time. 45 minutes of the show is such a short time to show you 8 hours of work.
Right.
When I walk into a place, I look what's around it, what the business is doing, and what I believe it should be. And I have a vision built up. The minute I walk into that restaurant, I have a vision of what it should be. The same as when I say I create a dish, I look at the plate and I can actually see the plate, taste it, and I haven't even picked up a knife to produce it yet. I can see it, I can taste it, and it's the same with the restaurant. I see what I think it should be, and I go for it. And when somebody tells me, oh, that's not possible, there's a water pipe electrician, electrics there, I don't care. Move it. And then when they say they can't, then I make them move it. You know, and that was a sledgehammer. Yeah, when I picked up that sledgehammer, they were shocked to death. Yeah, I couldn't make the arch that I wanted, but I made a statement of putting them holes or them picture frame type of things to give it some depth. Mm-hmm. And it looked great. And then all of a sudden, the designers and the builders are like, wow, yeah, we never thought that would work. Well, we don't know until we try it. And there is no such thing as can't do. Nothing is impossible.
And you weren't electrocuted.
Oh, don't worry about that.
You have a strong immune system.
Yeah. I've got flat bottom shoes and I've got rubber soles. It's okay.
Speaking of kitchen, what have you been experimenting in the kitchen in your own time?
We change the menu at my restaurant every 5 weeks, so we're constantly changing and practicing new things. So I was literally in New York City taping The View yesterday morning before I came down to Miami for Food and Wine. So we were using my new sort of low-fat alternative healthy stuff. We did a blackened salmon, or Cajun spiced salmon lasagna, which has no fat in it at all. So we're looking, you know, without sacrificing the flavor and the guest expectations, we're trying to sort of make it healthy for you and have fun with it. And that's what we're practicing on right now. We're working on a new book called Fit Fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started doing a column in Muscle and Fitness magazine on health and food. So sort of going that route, but having fun doing it.
And so where can folks get more information about your products?
They can go online to Robert Irvine's Eats or eatshi.com.
And
the Food Network carries a lot of my products also, foodnetwork.com.
Now, you were on The View. Were you able to get a word in?
Let me tell you, I had the best 8 minutes of my career on The View with Sherry and Whoopi Goldberg and... you know, we were cooking and having fun. And, you know, I really truly believe that if people want to learn, they listen and have fun at the same time. And Sherry was absolutely hilarious, you know. And you can see that Friday, this Friday, 11 o'clock in the morning. It was just so wonderful. You know, life is all about experiences. And I take every day the way it comes and just try and be positive and put a positive spin on things. And it's just great.
Mm-hmm. And I can hear a little bit of wind. Are you on the beach?
I am literally, I'm on my way. I'm staying at the Gansmoor Hotel, and I'm on my way to the Lowe's Hotel to pick up my passes and my credentials for the show.
Okay.
You know, which is kind of funny because every time I talk, I get people walking past me going, oh, Restaurant Impossible, Dinner Impossible, Worst Cooks, like your hair. You know, it's kind of funny.
So long as they're not cursing at you and I don't have to edit, it's okay.
Oh, no, this one curses at me.
Of course not.
That's another show. He's on a different network.
And the people you work with don't commit suicide. Okay.
Yes, there you go.
All right, let's move on in the cinema because this is film. So have you been able to see any movies lately, especially now that it's Oscar season?
I have got to tell you, I did see No Strings Attached, which I thought was funny. Ashton Kutcher was just the funniest, and it's almost life realistic because I know people that do that.
Right.
I wanted to see Green Hornet, and I still have not got there yet, but hoping that next week I'll be able to get to that. But a lot of mixed reviews on it, so I don't know. What do you think about it?
I actually did enjoy Green Hornet, as did my daughter. It's one, it feels like a slacker version of Spider-Man, where it's this, you know, Seth Rogen is trying to create a superhero, even though he has no superpowers. And then there's also the fun battle between he and Kato, the big debate on who is the hero and who is the sidekick. And they have a lot of fun with that. And the 3D is pretty cool as well, and I'm also a fan of... Christoph Waltz, who plays the villain, who also has an identity crisis. He's not villainy enough.
You should send me an email every week of the movies I have to watch.
That can be done, sir.
You know, because then it's much easier for me, because you've already got the inside scoop. You know, I put out on Twitter, okay, who knows, who says what about Green Hornet? And I got a lot of different things on it. But I still want to watch it because I kind of like that superhero movie type stuff. I like action movies. I also like realistic, based on real true stories movies.
Like The King's Speech?
The King's Speech was, and that's an Oscar winner. And I have not seen it, but I saw trailers for it. And that, I'm going to tell you, Colin is an awesome actor. And I really believe that that's going to take an Oscar.
Fingers crossed on that one. Now, you talk about action films, and we'll get to the realistic stuff a little bit. Do you remember some of the early action films you watched as a kid that really rung your bell, or particular action stars that you admired?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember watching The Guns of Navarone. And Jesus, that's like forever ago. That was a huge movie when I was a kid. What else? Oh, Raging Bull.
Yes.
That's a different action movie, but it was a great movie. What else did I watch as a kid? That's a good question.
Well, that's why I asked.
I watched a lot of movies as a kid.
I remember
every Saturday morning I used to go to a theater, or a cinema, sorry, that it used to be a theater, but they played movies on a Saturday morning for kids. So I managed to see a lot of movies as a kid. Not so much now, but
right.
I do enjoy. I watched, The Expendables. I thought that was funny. I watched Red, which I really liked because I like Helen Mirren.
In all sorts of ways.
Bruce Willis. Yeah. I mean, just goofy stuff. But sometimes, when you live in this world that we live in, the escapism is, some of the stuff they do is unreal. Mm-hmm. Could never be done. But, we lose ourselves into their movies, and that's what makes the music business such a great thing.
There are some action films that have come out, and I declared last year the year of the ridiculous action film, and Red was an example, The Expendables was an example,
yeah.
As was Machete and Kick-Ass, where the action scenes are so over the top, but everybody involved knows how over the top it is, and that's something to be said compared to the action films of, say, the 80s and the 90s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, remember, we changed, our society changed dramatically in the last 10 years, or the last 5 years, in fact. What we used to, I don't know how old you are, I'm 45 years old, but what my parents used to watch and what I used to watch are two different things. The values have changed dramatically. But I think it's interesting to see that the athleticism of these actors that do what they do, again, has changed. If you look at sort of movie heroes, the Clint Eastwoods, we don't get them anymore. They're not made like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The Carl Brunsons, Steve McQueen was a huge hero for me.
Ah.
When they did the motorcycle ride, The Escape.
The Great Escape.
I mean, Great Escape. I mean, come on. That was a movie that you cannot ever watch that movie, 30 times. And they still see things that I didn't see the time before. The music is right, the action is right, the stunts are right, and you can actually believe that story. Whereas nowadays, as you said, it's sort of so out, far out.
Now, when The Great Escape came out, did you go out on your bicycle and try to recreate that?
Oh yeah, I had a little. Actually, it wasn't even a bike; it was something that we made from a frame and two wheels. I can't even tell you it was a bike, but my family didn't have that much money, so we took parts and created a bike. We created little ramps and jumps and went over them and grazed a few knees and got a few broken bones on that one. But it was such an amazing movie that young people try to do that. They try to emulate stars.
And also, you talk about the technology. I mean, that was, a guy did that as opposed to a computer-animated jump. And I'm sure, so many kids wanted to downshift 12 times in a row like Steve McQueen did in Bullet.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a big believer in myself of animated movies. But, when we did the show, we did Dinner Impossible at Pixar, and I watched with John Lasseter and Brad Bird, Ratatouille and Cars and all these things. You kind of get into that genre, but it's still alien to me. Avatar, I did not watch it because it's hard for me to put my. It's not real, I'm a realist. I like to see things that I can put myself in a position to do. And Steven Seagal was a huge. I actually went to Steven Seagal's house in 2006.
Okay.
During the Oscars. And he was a big, huge, I was a huge fan, and I still am of him. But to see him in his real life is kind of, it's weird. I just did the Home Makeover Edition. That's a program that I try out every Sunday with my kids. And to do it, it was sort of surreal. And to sit in that house with Steven Seagal after watching him do, Under Siege and all these things, it's kind of weird.
Now,
because they're real human beings,
Now, have there ever been other action stars that you've been able to hang out with or cook for or things like that?
I've met Chuck Norris. I haven't hung out with him, but he's another one that's just an amazing martial artist. but not many. I don't get a chance to hang out with many people because of my travel schedule. And, you know, hey, I just cook for a living. I'm not an A-list personality. I cook, man. So if I bump into you, great. I mean, yesterday I ended up with David Bonaris, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
He does that What Would You Do Next if somebody fell down in front of you.
Oh, right.
I'm on ABC.
Yes.
I think he was the nicest guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't bump into many people because, you know, I'm always traveling. And,
sure. Now, was there a particular action film that you prefer, whether it's war or cop dramas or martial arts or westerns or anything?
I'm more into war.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the Tom Cruise Valkyrie.
Okay.
Because it's based on history. I have a huge thing about world wars and historic things. I'm kind of into that. So I love war movies. I love, you know, I was in the Falklands too, so that's kind of in the military, so it kind of goes both ways there. So I love that. I love history. I do like cop movies.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're not sort of, you can see through them. Martial arts occasionally, but, you know, I really do like the war movies, and they don't make many of them anymore, you know. There was a part in the 80s and 90s that were all about war, you know.
Right.
Remakes of the Battle of the Bulge and all this stuff, and I love that stuff because I'm a military guy. And I go to a function every year, a Horse Guards Parade, where it's all the, you know, World War II veterans talking about their time, you know, when they were going in the front of Armagh, and, you know, the Germans were retreating out of the back, and they were, you know, it's just amazing to listen and to see on screen. And I know they're two different things because they're very, very romanticized on television, but, you know, they actually happen. Silver River Quay, for example, all that type of stuff I love.
I think of, because you asked me, I'm 41, and I remember also the big cast films like The Battle of Britain and A Bridge Too Far, you know, which seems like
Battle
half of
Britain was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about Douglas Bader, and I don't know if you know that name, but Douglas Bader was a pilot that lost both his legs during the Battle of Britain. And he was the only pilot actually to be allowed to get back into a cockpit and fly. So, yeah, that's my history. You know, and literally, if you stand on the White Cliffs of Dover, I think it's 20 miles from there to France. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine that Rommel and Hitler stood on the opposite side of that water and were looking through binoculars at Churchill, looking at them, I mean, it's kind of a weird feeling, but that's history.
Mm-hmm.
Things to do with real history.
Now, yes, since you are a Navy man, how were films like Master and Commander or Crimson Tide as far as...
I love Master and Commander. I love Crimson Tide. Master and Commander, you know, obviously I was in the Navy in England, and I was stationed at Portsmouth where HMS Victory, which was Lord Nelson's flagship. So then times, Master and Commander, I grew up with then times. You know, it's naval history.
Mm-hmm.
The English Navy was based on that type of movie, or the movie is based on the real world, but I have artifacts from that time from the lieutenant of Lord Nelson. I have the dirks, the swords. I'm a collector of that type of thing. So, yeah, absolutely. Master and Commander, Crimson Tide, obviously, because when you have the pressure of a nuclear submarine, could that happen? Yeah, it could.
Sure.
You know, is there revolts in the modern-day military? No, but could it happen during a time of stress? These commanders that have that power to press buttons and blow up things, mainly worlds, yeah, that would be a stress situation.
Say, you also have any of the Mutiny on the Bounty films, or
yeah, again, that's based on history.
Mm-hmm.
It's real. So Mutiny on the Bounty. What's his name? Hannibal Lecter, man.
Anthony Hopkins and Mel Gibson.
Anthony Hopkins. Just love that guy. I really do. And Mel Gibson, for all his issues that he's had over the last couple of years, the guy's an amazing actor and an amazing movie producer. If you think what he touched on a subject that nobody else would ever go near, the Passion of Christ, nobody would touch that. And yet he produced, you know, a questionable movie that made people think. So, yeah, they're just great. And I don't see actors coming through the ranks that are like, you know, these people that are getting older in years.
Yeah, my wife had an acting class a few years ago, and one of the teenage students asked, "Who's Paul Newman?"
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do a movie, so I don't think, you know, to immerse yourself in a character and believe that you are, and that's what they do,
mm-hmm.
they put their personality into that character and believe they are that character, And these character actors are so good, you know, at what they do. You know, it's just amazing to me. I watched War Street, which we talked about before, with War Street with, just had cancer, what's his name? Michael Douglas.
Oh, right, Wall Street.
And Kurt and Michael.
Yeah.
You know, there's an acting family that really get it, mm-hmm. you know.
I also know you're a family man, and there's also give and take when it comes to movie night. How does that work in the Irvine house?
Well, it's funny because, you know, my girls pick the movies they want to see, and Daddy goes wherever they want to go.
Yeah, I know
or
the feeling.
The movies, you know, it's funny because Sunday night up until just now was all about Worst Cooks. So
right.
my younger ones would love to watch Worst Cooks. Basically, they're not into the soppy love movies that the young kids are into now, you know, with Selena Gomez and all that type of thing. But they do like movies, and whatever they like to see, I go and watch, you know. Because I don't get that much time with my kids, so it's quality time, you know.
Yeah, in our house we call it Driving Miss Emma.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, you actually do watch your stuff when it's on the telly? When it's on?
I watch Worst Cooks because my girls, my little girl, Talia, who's 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
and my daughter, my older daughter, Annalise, who's 13, they just love that show. They see Daddy in a very different light than doing dinner impossible. So it's just interesting that they like at that age to hang because, you know, I know as they get older, they're not going to want to hang.
Right. Enjoy it while you can.
That's right. That's Robert Irvine, Chef Robert Irvine of Food Network. You can see him on Chopped All Stars this Sunday night at 9 o'clock on Food Network. And of course, Restaurant Impossible is Wednesdays at 10. And I think they're done repeating Worst Cooks. But Dinner Impossible will be back in program somewhere down the road. So always fun. Robert says he wants to be a part of the show. Well, he's got it. So we'll be checking in with Chef Robert from time to time, especially he told me if he actually sees some of the films that I recommend. And yes, I've been sending him weekly emails now
awesome.
Because he asked me.
Yeah.
Courts can't do otherwise. No. It was very, very cool. So anyway, I'm sure we'll be talking with Chef Robert Irvine in the near future. Okay,
cool.
We need to raise a glass a little bit. This is one of the ladies I know I've made Kobe look up online. Actress Jane Russell, who we heard earlier, passed away at the age of 89, burst onto the scene. And burst on into the scene in all sorts of ways in the 1943 Howard Hughes film, The Outlaw. Just to make everybody feel really uncomfortable, she was 19 when that movie was made. Respect. So some of the other films she is known for, The Pale Face, Las Vegas Story, Son of Pale Face with Bob Hope, Rode the Ballet, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which we heard the song, The Tall Men, Gentlemen Marry Brunettes, Hot Blood, and one of my favorites from 1967, near the end of her film career, the Tom Laughlin biker drama, The Born Losers. So, and yes, she did the bra commercials, but she had a pretty decent film career, and the pictures of her in The Outlaw, well, they're a part of movie history and guy history, men history. So thank you, Jane, very, very much. And director Gary Winnick passed at the age of 49 on February 27th, produced several films, and directed a dozen film titles, including, now not all of these I was crazy about, Tadpole, the independent film with B.V. Newworth and Sigourney Weaver, 13 Going on 30, that was the Jennifer Garner Imitates Big film, I wasn't crazy about that, Bride Wars, which was god-awful. But there are two films that he directed which are a part of the Soucy household. One is the 2006 remake of Charlotte's Web, where it is okay to like the original and the remake equal. They both have their strengths and weaknesses, just like Charlie/ Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the original and the Tim Burton have their own pluses and minuses, and they're worth checking out. And then last year he directed one of my guilty pleasures from last year, Letters to Juliet, with Amanda Siegfried and Vanessa Redgrave and Franco Nero. And it was a extremely soppy love story, but Redgrave was really good in it. It wasn't How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And, well, I knew the backstory on Redgrave and Franco, and, well, the shots of Italy are just gorgeous. So thank you, Gary Winnick, for that. Got a couple other DVD titles just of note, so you know Bambi is out on Walt Disney Blu-ray, for those who are into that. I'm sure the Kids Film Correspondent will be asking. As Melissa said earlier, Burlesque is on DVD and Blu-ray. The Cable Guy, the film that Jim Carrey got a gob of money for, directed by Ben Stiller, that nobody saw and is now getting a cult status, is out. I am looking forward to this. Dr. Black, Mr. Hyde, with Bernie Casey from the 70s. That's right, blaxploitation horror. Gotta love it. The disappointing action film Faster with Dwayne Johnson, Billy Bob Thornton, that was straight-ahead revenge until it turned into morality redemption story.
Nobody can stop him.
The last third. You can't stop him. And the film that Anne Hathaway didn't get nominated for, and a lot of people thought she would, the romantic drama Love and Other Drugs, a.k.a. our female co-worker's other favorite date movie.
Yeah.
127 hours. Well, we're checking out. Made my top 10. Excellent performance by James Franco. And on Walt Disney Blu-ray, for those who really care, the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy. Hmm. One third of those are pretty decent. And now it's time for... Go ahead.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Now, I've overloaded Mr. Slagle a little bit. I know it's been a busy time. He's got three films, and he got one in the can.
Yes.
And for once, it's a film from the 70s that you did like. And,
hey,
and,
no.
And it was good pace.
Back the truck up. I like Shaft.
All right. Okay.
What else?
Any movie with Pam Grier.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So, but, you know, Friends of Eddie Coyle, yeah. Serpico.
Love Serpico.
You did love Serpico.
Yeah.
Okay. French Connection.
Love French Connection.
All right. Dirty Harry. Magnum Force. Yeah. All right. All right. So maybe it's the art films from the 70s that... form a
sentence. Things are different in the 70s. That's all there is to it. Good, bad, or indifferent. Things are different.
But you watched the... Because hopefully you didn't see the remake first.
What?
The Longest Yard.
No, I've not seen that.
Well, there you go. You
with
got to
Nelly
see
and Adam Sandler.
And some wrestlers and other people. No, that's okay. But you watched the 1974 starring Burt Reynolds, directed by Robert Aldrich, Eddie Albert, and Bernadette Peters, among many, many others.
Yep.
Your thoughts, sir?
Loved it.
Good.
Hilarious.
Good raunchy 70s comedy.
Yep.
I think Slapshot's going to be next. That might be your
next.
Oh,
I've seen
Slapshot.
I love Slapshot.
We are hopefully going to be getting in touch with some people involved with Slapshot and maybe your Indiana Ice.
Sweet.
We'll get to that. So, well, cool. Yeah, and The Longest Yard is one of those, you just should really never, ever watch it on television. I Think I Broke His Freaking Neck is the television edit. And not very good. And one of the longest yards, that last play, it a little bit of speed up just a little bit. It's not Invictus. It's okay. It's fine. Respect. West Side. Yes, Mr. Slagle and I have been on an Ali G kick lately.
Yep.
That doesn't really help the show out at all. But,
mostly it was just this afternoon,
but
it keeps us
entertained. So it's when our never-ending campaign of we want Tommy Wiseau, Werner Herzog, and Ali G to do voiceover work because we think it would just bring the bucks in.
Oh yeah.
So I'm glad you enjoyed Longest Yard.
Going to I tried to get through In the Loop. I
stay for Malcolm Tucker. I'm telling you. I know it's a fairly dense comedy about the political day to day. But stay for Malcolm Tucker. Stay for Jamie McDowell. McDonald. You will be a funnier person for it.
I'm gonna try to get through that this weekend, and also tonight it's gonna be
Goldfinger. Your dad should like that.
Yeah.
So and you'll finally meet on screen Honor Blackman. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here are some words to live by.
Violent greed is people.
Zardoz has spoken.
Thanks to Chef Robert Irvine for chatting with us again. Thanks for Melissa to come running in and going back to her regular job. On behalf of Kobe Slagle, I'm Matthew Sosi. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.